So Asians in Britain, and just to remind you again, we say Asians, and it means Indians and Pakistanis to us, which is a bit of a stupid way of thinking of Asia, but that's just a tradition. India, Pakistan, Bangladesh, and a few people from Sri Lanka, Nepal, Afghanistan, Iraq, etc. Very often people will define themselves as Asian or British Asian. Not unusual, British Asian. So these are identities you can choose. Yeah? You can choose. You can say, oh, well, no, I'm Indian. No, I'm not Indian. I'm Asian. Well, I'm British Asian. They may be the same position they've chosen. Just like you have black and black British. These are identities which you can choose, unless you're white. Yeah. Okay. It is a debate. Some of the people from India, or the people whose parents are from India, would prefer to be called British Asian. Others prefer British Indian. And others prefer British Hindu. The religious link. Yeah, so you can choose, it's like a salad. Yeah, you mix in your identity. 56% of British Indians are Hindus. 30% are Sikhs. And 13% are Muslims from India. Whereas the people from Pakistan are 92% Muslim. Okay? So the Indians are a variety. A lot of Hindus. Sikhs. I don't know a lot about Sikhism, but it's quite interesting. It's very. Sikhism was a religion established to say that men and women had the same rights hundreds of years ago, which is quite an unusual thing for a religion to do. So there you go. The Indians who came to Britain mostly came from the same part of India, Punjab and Gujarat. So the languages are Punjabi and Gujarati. If you go to a library in the town where my mother lives, the local library, you will find hundreds of books in Gujarati and hundreds of books in Punjabi and thousands of books in English. Okay, but certainly when you go to ordinary towns in England, you notice this atmosphere of multiculturalism, which is that is to say that the official policy of government and institutions is to have a variety, for example, of books in the library in different languages. This sometimes happens in France, but very often in France, the local government of the library will say, no, it must all be in French, and of course we will help people to learn French, but it's got to be in French. We don't want a bit of everything. It's more difficult to do that. It does exist. I have seen Arabic books in libraries in France, but it's not the typical thing to do in France. This is the whole question of what is multiculturalism. There you go. People who are Indian have more diplomas than white people in Britain. They are more likely to have a diploma. Whereas people who are Pakistani are less likely. They have very, very different situations for different groups. And it's notable that people who come from India or whose parents come from India are more successful in university than the average, whereas people from Pakistan are less so. There's probably a historical reason, but I don't know what it is. A lot of British Asian men marry women who are not British Asians. But this is not so much the case with British Asian women. C'est que les jeunes femmes d'origine asienne ont tendance à se marier avec des gens de leur propre culture, tandis que les jeunes hommes, ils vont chercher en dehors de la culture en général. Okay, let's have a look at the history a little bit. Again, it's a very painful history. It's very difficult to look at the history of England and India and be proud to be English. It's pretty negative. India was occupied by England a long time ago, and for hundreds of years, India was governed by a private company authorised by the Queen of England. A private company. It was a very special form of colonisation. It was not an official government. There was not an official English government in India for hundreds of years. There was just a private company, like, you know, McDonald's, yeah, who organised the country, and they had a private army and money and everything. Just a private company, they just organised it. And here they are, the East India Company. Donc la Compagnie des Indes Orientales. Yeah? And they made the laws. Of course, this is not a democratic period anywhere, so they made the laws and so on. And they also made money. This is the money that they produced. Yes. They were authorised by the Queen of England to produce money. But also, they were authorised to have a private army, which was not controlled by the British government. So it's a very, very exceptional story. Very, very, very exceptional story. Okay, so but we want to look at the immigrants. And a lot of the first immigrants were sailors, of course. And you know that in England there are a lot of Indian restaurants and we like Indian food. When do you imagine was the first Indian restaurant in London? Presque tout le monde pense que c'est beaucoup plus récent. 1810, le premier restaurant indien. And this is the man who put it in. And here is the plaque. Yeah, I've got the plaque. I would like to have the plaque. Yeah, the site of Hindustan Coffee House, London's first Indian restaurant, 1810. Okay. Now, of course, restaurants were only for rich people, of course, at this time. Today, Indian restaurants are for everybody except the very poor. But at the time, of course, it was for rich people. Ce monsieur Sakhidine Mohammadi, il a introduit autre chose en Angleterre qui est très apprécié. C'est le premier à introduire le shampoing.
I mean, people didn't wash themselves very much, but if they washed themselves, they used the same soap for their hair and for everything else. Yeah.
So he brought in champagne. He was rich. He also introduced Indian massage and things of that nature. Now, in the 16th and the 17th century, there were very few immigrants to England from India. Au 16e et 17e, il y avait très peu d'immigrés indiens en Angleterre, si ce n'est que le niveau de vie était plus élevé en Inde, alors ils ne risquaient pas de vouloir venir. But once the British rule was established, it became very different. Of course, the industrialization of Britain meant there was a lot more, a much better standard of living in Britain. In general, British people believed that the Indians were happy to be part of the British Empire. And in 1857, there was an Indian rebellion, which the British call the Indian Mutiny. La mutinerie indienne. Les Indiens, ils l'appellent la première guerre d'indépendance. You can choose. And in 1857, then there was a rebellion against British domination. And you have here.
J'étais dans une galerie d'art à Leeds et j'ai vu ça. Je me suis dit, oh, c'est étrange, ça c'est quoi? C'est une peinture sur la révolte indienne.
Look, there is Britain. The lady is Britain, Britannia, and she is killing the Indian tiger. Who has what has the Indian tiger done? Has killed the children. Yeah. It's an imperialist painting to defend the, which I will tell you about in a moment, the terrible, terribly bloody repression of the Indian rebellion. Yes, so it was obviously very important to the people at the time, because you only paint pictures if it's important to you. That's a very impressive painting. Now, I'm going to jump because I want to show you the pictures. And I might come back to the Indian Rebellion. 1857, the Indian Rebellion. This is a plaque. C'est les noms des soldats anglais morts pendant la révolte irlandaise. Okay? Much later, in the 20th century, of course, the struggle for independence for India was led by Mahatma Gandhi. Today, he is a very popular figure in England. Well, he's dead, of course, but he's very popular. At the time, he was hated by the British elite. Winston Churchill detested Gandhi. Huh? And he wrote not very nice things about him. And Gandhi organized millions and millions of people to refuse to buy British goods, to refuse to pay tax on salt. Le sel était très, très cher à l'époque, nécessaire. And so the British made a lot of money from tax on salt. Mais l'Inde, bien sûr, est entourée d'océans et on peut faire du sel très facilement. De l'eau de mer, mais c'était illégal. And because the British wanted the tax. And so Gandhi organized the March to the Sea in the 1920s. He got thousands of people and they marched from town to town and they went to the sea and they made salt. And it was a c'était une approche médiatique. Hein? They told everybody in the entire world, we are going to get salt from the sea. And the British soldiers stopped them and attacked them. But of course, in the view of the world, the British looked ridiculous. Yeah, that India is surrounded by ocean and it's illegal to make salt from the sea because you must buy it from the British. Yeah, so it was a very intelligent politician. Yeah, not just a, I think he was a pretty powerful guy as well, but he was a very intelligent politician because he announced 2 months before, we are going to march for 30 days to the sea. Now, he could have got a bus. But, of course, the 30 days march is so that all the newspapers are following every day. And the march to the sea is just one example. The campaign was very long and very complicated. But one example was the march to the sea to make salts to protest against the British. So really a great political tactician. There is a film about him which is very interesting. Although I have to say that in the film he is perfect in every way. Yeah, and so that's a little bit disappointed because, you know, perfect people, apart from me, don't exist. Here he is, the statue of Gandhi then in New York. Another statue of Gandhi somewhere else. That's the... Okay, so to come back to the... So, of course, the big struggle for independence led by Gandhi finally was successful, and in 1948, independence was won by the Indians. I'm going to come back to some of these stories in a minute, but I want to show you the other pictures because they're going to take my thing away. I just wanted to show you some petite parenthèse sur la télévision et la représentation des immigrés. There was a series of comedy programs about immigrants in Britain. This is the most recent one, goodness gracious me, after 1998, so 10 years ago. And this was really, so this was about what life was like being Indian in Britain. This was fundamentally a sort of anti-racist comedy. And they have a lot of sketches mocking racists. Very, very popular. However, 20 years before, 1976, you had this program, Mind Your Language, 1976, not 76. You had this, which was a program about a man who taught English to immigrants. And the immigrants are all very ridiculous and stereotyped. This was one of the first programs to talk about immigrants in comedy on television. But it was basically very stereotyped. And the other one, which is extremely famous, is this one, which is called Love Thy Neighbor. Yeah, Aimez-vous les uns les autres. And it's about a white man and a black man who lives next door to him. And this was an attempt to talk about racism in comedy. In this story, the white man is very racist and hates blacks. And the black man hates whites. This is the story, yes. So in this story, it was racism was a story of equal situations, which, of course, it is not. So the aim, the objective was anti-racist, the objective. However, the effect was not anti-racist because, in fact, the jokes which this man made against blacks, you heard them for a month. Everybody repeated them. But, of course, the jokes that this man said about whites were forgotten immediately. So it was an interesting question where the objective was anti-racist, let's laugh at racists. But making racism funny is not so easy, and they stopped it. Certainly today it would be impossible to put this on the television. Parce que, en fait, présenter quelqu'un qui n'arrête pas de sortir des insultes racistes, même si c'est pour se moquer du raciste, yeah, it's nevertheless it's very heavy. You know, you don't necessarily want to listen to them. Okay, Love Thy Neighbor in Australia. It was very popular. There they are again. You see, they're the. It was a very delicate balance. In fact, the black man is comes from a family of aristocrats in Africa. Okay, and the white man is an ordinary working man. So it's very strange. This was with the objective was anti-racist. You know, let's show. You know, but it was in my opinion, it was a failure. The objective was anti-racist, but it was a failure. But it was the first time that somebody said, this question is important, we must make comedy which talks about this. But like as I say, the success, goodness gracious me, is more of a success about it. Okay, I think that's all the... Yes, otherwise just a couple of course... people of Indian heritage, Freddie Mercury est d'origine indienne, and of course he became extremely famous with Queen. And who else have we got? This man is an Indian immigrant, and he is one of the richest men in Britain today. Ça fait une belle jambe aux autres Indiens, mais this is Mr. Mittal, M-I-T-T-A-L, and he is the richest man in Britain. Et le cinquième du monde entier. So it is possible, although rather difficult, to become a millionaire despite the racism. Alors là, j'ai un peu sauté des choses parce que il va venir me prendre mon vidéoprojecteur. Yes, the arrival of this man, Amir Khan, not Monsieur Khan, K-H-A-N, who became the captain of the British cricket team. And this was a symbol, yeah, that, you know, that when you have the... je sais qui je suis pas le foot vraiment. Hein. L'équipe nationale française, il y a pas mal de gens, de joueurs qui sont pas noirs. Hein. Est-ce que le capitaine est blanc ou noir?
Ça tourne en ce moment.
Pardon?
En ce moment, ça tourne à chaque match.
Ah, ça tourne, hein, d'accord. Ok.
C'est Patrice Evra jusqu'à la Coupe.
Ok. So this was the symbol, having the head of the captain of the cricket team of Indian origin was a big symbol. In fact, cricket has an imperial history because cricket was invented by the English in India, fundamentally because they had nothing to do. The servants did all the work. You know the old stereotype in the films of an Indian man pulling a fan? L'air conditionné avec un gars qui... It was true that really the English did nothing. Everything was done for them. And so they had to invent a game like cricket where fundamentally you don't do anything. And a cricket match lasts 5 days. 5 days, yeah. And it's extremely slow. So there you go. Right. Okay, I'm going to go back to a couple of questions. And let him take the let him take this thing away. So I'm just going to spend 10 minutes or so to go back to some big important questions. And first of all, then the Indian Rebellion. Donc voilà, je suis arrivé jusqu'à aujourd'hui, mais je vais me remettre. C'est bon, je me suis organisé. J'ai fait les parenthèses, etc.
Okay.
Yes, yeah, that's right. It's all yours. Yeah. On se débrouille d'une façon.
Oui, on se débrouille. C'est vraiment
une passion. Don't trip over anything. Okay. Yeah. So I just want to go back to just for 10 minutes to the Indian Rebellion of 1857. Je suis arrivé jusqu'à aujourd'hui, mais je remonte là. So the context was that more and more Indians were feeling that British domination was unjust. But the specific reason for this explosion was a religious question. Most of the British army in India were Indians. All of the officers, all of the captains were white English people, but the soldiers were Indians. And in fact, the Indian army, controlled by the British, was used in many wars in Crimea, in Africa, etc. Because, of course, there are a lot of people in India. Yeah? Now, what happened was that when the British introduced a new kind of bullet, let me explain something. These are old guns, yes? And what you have to do is you have to get the bullet, bite the end off, and put it into the thing. This sounds like it's not important, but it is. And to seal the bullet, there is fat, animal fat. And the soldiers in the Indian army at this time believed that the British had deliberately used pig fat, yeah, which was a religious problem for the Muslims. Okay? So there was this accusation that the British, they hate our religion so much that the fat they use in the bullets is pig fat. And of course it's a big religious problem for Muslims to eat pork. And they said they also use cow fat cow fat is a problem for Hindus. Now, was this true or not? We don't know if it was true. But it was a symbol because the East India Company had begun to be very active in promoting Christianity. In the 16th century and the in the 17th and 18th century, the East Indian Company said, oh no, we don't mind, we don't want to promote Christianity. Priests, shh, we want priests here for the white people, no evangelism please. But in the 19th century, all over the British Empire, this became a, we must make the people Christians. And so the evangelists went around India, and the Indians, quite understandably, were not very happy with this. And so there was all this atmosphere of of feeling not respected. And so many, many Indian soldiers believed that these new bullets were a religious humiliation. That was the beginning of it, of the rebellion. And it became a really huge, huge rebellion. This was the biggest army in Asia at the time. And it became a general revolt of the poor people across the whole of North India. Delhi was taken. La plus grande ville était prise par les rebelles. They began to attack the British tax offices. It began as a thing against religious humiliation, but it became an attack on taxes across the north. Telegraph offices were destroyed. 130,000 soldiers revolted. 130 000 soldats ont pris part à la révolte. Okay? The revolt was not very surprising because the taxes collected by the British in India were very, very high. À l'époque, 25% des revenus de l'État en Angleterre venaient de l'Inde. Donc, quand on se demande qui a payé la révolution industrielle, pour une bonne partie, c'est les Indiens. Of course, the people in India were poor, but there were a lot of them, so a bit of money from everyone that worked. And so, of course, the British Army from England arrived in India to destroy the revolts. And this, the arrival of the British Army was a tragedy for the Indians. As you can imagine, the guns of the British Army were better than the Indians. And the British really believed that they were the representatives of Christianity, and that the rebellion was the work of the devil. C'était vraiment super courant, vraiment de croire que c'était l'œuvre du diable, tout, c'est tout. They're very much religious. The Times, the newspaper, you know, the respectable and respected newspaper, The Times, said, every mutineer must be executed. In Oxford University, they had a big debate, and one of the speakers said, long lay trop difficile, mais il appelait à l'exécution, des exécutions de masse. When the British took Delhi, when the British conquered Delhi, they killed every man in town. They killed every man in town. And they also, they did something else which was particularly horrible. The execution method was to tie the man to a cannon and to blast the cannon through his body. Et donc ils attachaient les hommes au canon et ils le faisaient un gros trou avec une boule de canon. Why? Because keeping your body intact was a religious importance to the Indians, to the Hindus. And so it was a particularly vicious way of executing people. Where's page 9? Yes, okay. The result then was that the rebellion, of course, was crushed. However, the result was also that the East India Company was no longer had the confidence of the British government. They quickly closed the East India Company and they established a more traditional colonization with a governor who represents the Queen and not a private company anymore. They also declared at this moment that Queen Victoria should be Empress of India. Elle était reine d'Angleterre, bien sûr, et elle l'a déclarée impératrice d'Inde. Elle n'y a jamais rendu les pieds, elle n'y a jamais mis les pieds en Inde. But she became that. Okay, so today I've tried to look very quickly at three questions. The history of anti-racism in Britain over the last 50 years. Really, the most important thing about the history of anti-racism is, of course, some of the facts, but also some of the difficult questions, you know, which don't have an easy answer. Secondly, the history of West Indians, Jamaicans, Trinidadians, and so on, and what happened to them in England. Which is partly the history of racism, because you can't avoid it. Finally, then, Indians and Pakistanis, or as we say in modern English, Asians. Okay, we only have, I think, so next week is just before the 8th, and it's just, yeah. We only have two more classes. Next week, I'm going to look a little bit at identity as women and questions of discrimination and so on in 20th century Britain. And in the last week, I'll be looking at gay identity and the history of gay identity in Britain, because I found some books on it. There are not many books on it. And that will be it for the time being. I'm going to stop now, because when I don't have any pictures, it's very difficult for me to continue. And you can have a rest. That's enough.